This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents A Sucky Love Story, Overcoming Unhappily Ever After. Written and performed by Brittany Louise Taylor.
Chapter 1, Online Dating. I was lonely. Really, really lonely. My boyfriend of 2 months had just broken up with me, and I thought I kind of loved him, which was huge for me because I was 31 and yet to experience any kind of real love. I know what you're thinking. 31, single, never been in love? That's just sad. I guess you could say I was a late bloomer. He was kind of a loser, too. Tall, handsome, but really into vaping and making what he called art in Photoshop. I have a type, according to my mom. If they have no job and no car, then they are probably dating me. To top it all off, less than a week after he called it quits, my ex-boyfriend got married to this blonde Russian chick for her green card because he had no job and no car. How did I find this out? Instagram. Thankfully, my work keeps me pretty busy, so I don't have time to obsess as much as I would like about things, but I am prone to mild social media stalking. My favorite button is the refresh button. Can I get a high five? Don't judge me quite yet. Reserve your judgment until you have heard the whole story that I'm about to tell you. Back to my Photoshopping ex. He had to make it look legit for immigration, so he started posting sexy photos of her with just two words. My wife. I went from being heartbroken, too shocked, to disgustedly furious. Of course I called him out on it. And when I say called him out, I mean I sent him an angry text full of malice and angst and then hit block. Showed him. I know what you're thinking, and no, this book isn't about the green card my broke ex-boyfriend facilitated for the hot Russian. You are just going to have to keep listening, because trust me, it gets good. But first, maybe we should backtrack a bit. Who am I? Just some girl who happens to be moderately famous. I have the weirdest, coolest job in the world, and it involves this website called YouTube. You might have heard of it, and if you haven't, how's life under that rock that you call home? Kidding. For over 11 years, I've gotten paid to make online content. I get to sit in my house and come up with crazy ideas and then put them into motion. Music video parodies, sketches, do-it-yourself projects, blah, blah, blah. I never really commit to one style. Some people are just family bloggers. Others do makeup. I get bored easily, so I'm always trying to reinvent my wheel. There's no better feeling than when I have busted my butt on a video, uploaded it, and then get to witness the response from a sea of internet strangers I call family. Can I tell you a secret? For someone who lives such a public life, I'm kind of a loner. I think I just prefer existing behind a computer screen, socializing with faceless users in the comment sections of my videos. Over 1 million people have subscribed to my YouTube channel throughout the years, and thousands of uploads later, the relationships that I nurture the most are those with virtual strangers. Not that I don't have a lot of friends in real life, but I'm always working. Frankly, I love human beings, but I also find them exhausting. I'm a once every few weeks, let's hang out, rarely text, never talk on the phone kind of friend. My idea of a fun night is takeout, movies, and going to bed by 10 p.m. Cliche? Yes. Netflix and chill, FTW. Rarely, if ever, do I venture to clubs or bars or any kind of social event. This created a problem. To actually meet someone of the opposite sex, you have to actually leave your house, right? I kept hoping it would magically happen. Like I would be at SoulCycle and some hottie with a 12-pack would just happen to be on the bike next to me. He wouldn't care that I was tall and skinny with bangs and frizzy long hair. My slim figure in desperate need of a tan. I'm really selling myself, huh? Honestly, I'm not that bad looking. Big blue eyes and my hair, even though it is frizzy, is thick and long. I like to think the rest of me is like an uncoordinated ballerina. I can't dance, but I look graceful. Love has almost happened for me a few times, but I blame my past failures on my early pursuit of athletics. I grew up playing soccer, tennis, and a few other sports, which I think made me overly aggressive. If I want something, I go after it, but that doesn't work with men. It took me turning 30 to realize that the male species enjoys mind games. They like to be the ones to text first, pursue, decide where you go on your first few dates, and eventually make the first move. I am a feminist at heart, but men are men and women are women. There are base instincts there, and men like to be the hunters. Ugh, boring. Flash forward to 2015, and I am 31 years old. I have a great job, great friends that I never see, and an adorable Spanish-style bungalow from the 1920s. I am completely and utterly alone, sitting in my bathrobe in the living room of my hipster house, surrounded by built-ins full of antiques and knickknacks I have painstakingly collected. I grab my phone and contemplate joining an app called Tinder. It is actually my friend John's fault. I was in Florida for a convention when he pulled out his phone and proclaimed, "I'm gonna find myself a date." At first, I was kind of hurt because I kind of like John. Even though he was too short for me and a total man slut, he had gorgeous brown eyes and a face full of freckles. Did I mention that he was a yoga instructor on the side? I had seen him without a shirt on, for work of course. Pretty sure that I was drooling. Sad to say, but I always inevitably become one of the guys. The one that gets invited to do the guy stuff because I'm too wholesome to date, too soon to marry, and too much fun to be around to actually get around to deciding if they should date or marry me. At least I'm smart enough to know that I'm easily friend-zoned. It was not always this way. If you had a penis, I used to be terrified of you. All through high school, I had a crush on this one guy, partially because he was the only male taller than me in the entire school. My teenage infatuation would have paired nicely with my lanky 6-foot frame, and it didn't hurt that he was easy on the eyes. We just stared at each other for 4 years, never actually going on a real date. I like to think that the feelings were mutual, but he was popular and I was a drama nerd with acne. It was purely one-sided. As I was saying before I went off on a tangent, back in 2015, I was sitting in my living room in my old bathrobe, sick of being the prudish friend that you texted out of boredom. If love hadn't found me, I was going to find love. My biological clock wasn't ticking, but I thought it was time that I found something tangible. For example, my parents were married for 38 years before my dad passed away from cancer. Their relationship wasn't perfect, but they were perfect for each other. I wanted that for myself. Hello, modern technology. In a matter of minutes, I had a profile on Tinder featuring my sexy photos, which for me involved being fully clothed. There was a headshot from that one day when I magically was able to blow dry my hair perfectly straight. Another photo of me sitting in the car. The sun had hit my locks just right, and I looked like a mother effing goddess. I don't use the F word very often. It just sounds wrong when I say it. And finally, a photo of me in a short dress, heels, and red lipstick standing next to a window looking like something out of the 1950s. I was satisfied with my work. I had photos, but not too many photos, and my description of myself was short with strategic emojis. Heck, I would date me. My fingers and fate launched me into a love-hate relationship with online dating. I cannot tell you how many times I have deleted Tinder only to reinstall it in a moment of weakness. The app is designed like a slot machine for romantic prospects. You keep hoping that the next swipe, the next photo, will lead you to that genetic jackpot. But it turns out, most people on the app are just looking for sex. They weren't shy about it either. I would match with some nice, wholesome-looking guy who had a photo of him hugging his mom, only to get a raunchy message moments later. "Hey, beautiful, why don't you come over later and put those lips to good use?" Block, delete, barf. This wasn't Tinder's fault, or apps like it. It was just the reality of our society and the hookup culture which has become the norm. I am sure that even on the most wholesome dating sites, men and women ran into the very same problem. One of my first in-person dates was with a male model from New York. He was stunning. Can you call a guy stunning? Whatever, you get it. He was yummy. We decided to meet in Griffith Park in Los Angeles for a hike. Exercise and social interaction? Two birds with one stone. Even if I ended up not liking the dude, at least I got a workout in. Swoon, he was even better looking than his photos. Not trying to be shallow, but attraction for me is always first physical, then mental. From his long, wavy blonde hair, crystal blue eyes, bad boy looking for a nice girl vibe, everything about him was my type. His sweatpants were worn-looking by design, and his muscle shirt exposed his chiseled arms, which were hard-earned. I even liked his mun, the male version of a bun. Not all guys can pull off a mun, but he was a mun artist. Mr. Mun explained how he had hit the pause button on modeling and was working for a solar energy company. The guy had a house, a car, a job he was passionate about, and goals. The first hour of our hike was going swimmingly, until he got to the part where we talked about our childhoods. I grew up in a town with 2,500 people. He grew up on a compound with 150. My father was an airline pilot, while his father was the leader of a doomsday cult in Wisconsin. Mr. Munn was also on the NSA watch list, so he wasn't allowed to fly out of the United States because of his cult leader parent, spent the previous year in Hawaii living in a hut smoking peyote, and hated animals. I hope you're laughing right now because you can't make this stuff up. This led to a string of even more awkward dates. I went to church with this one guy who looked nothing like his photos, or maybe he did when they were taken 10 years ago. The dandruff and the bad breath were what really got me. Another movie date with a dude who literally fell asleep and started snoring in the theater. Coffee with another handsome fella, but he was clearly not over his ex-girlfriend, who he talked about during the entire duration of our time together. This led me to my Photoshop artist boyfriend. His name was Samuel, and I think I fell first for his amber-colored eyes. They were speckled green and strikingly unusual. I didn't fall for his wallet because the boy was sleeping on his friend's floor and filming/editing videos for some vape shop in Glendale. Sigh. But Samuel had this little boy charm. He was overly enthusiastic about everything and sent me sweet texts from the very beginning. All of this made me overlook the fact that he smoked all day long and was clinically depressed. Maybe I thought I could save him or help him to get back on track in life. You know the wounded dove syndrome? I always seemed to pick men that needed me. Our whirlwind romance lasted for 2 months. For whatever reason, towards the end of our relationship, I thought I kind of loved him. That was until he called it off. We had ventured one night to Griffith Observatory to look at the stars, laughing and talking with ease. He held my hand, leaning in for a kiss while we watched a film about the observatory's construction. Romantic? Very. On the car ride home, he started blurting out, "You're too good for me. I can't do this. Brittany, I am messed. I'm still in love with my ex." You should have seen my face. Pure and total shock. What made it even worse is that he kept changing his mind. One day, he wanted to be together. The next, just friends. Talk about confusing. That wasn't until I figured out exactly why he had broken up with me. Did he think I wouldn't see the Instagram posts? I mean, we followed each other. His photos popped up in my feed. It wasn't rocket science. Samuel had ended things so he could marry some stranger for money, helping her acquire a green card in the process. That is when I hate texted, blocked him, and instantly looked for a rebound. Instead of getting a job, he got a wife. Still bitter? You caught me. Talk about a pity party. I cried for a week, ate a lot of chocolate, worked out continuously so I could continue to eat chocolate, and reinstalled Tinder for the last time. I wanted to find someone better than Samuel, someone with goals and ambition, someone who was a man. It was high time I found someone who had their shit together. That was when I spotted Milosh. I almost swiped left, but fate stopped my hand. His photos were self-involved, but they definitely caught my attention. He was like a Ken doll, but human. Perfect. There was one of him shirtless, sporting only a pair of blue jeans while holding a knife and slicing a grapefruit. It was obviously staged and taken by a professional photographer. Not that it mattered. His golden blonde hair, blue eyes, and sun-kissed skin more than made up for him knifing the citrus. Another photo showed Milos on a plane, with his hoodie up, all brooding and mysterious. Yet another one of him laying on a bed of sorts with an adorable English bulldog puppy, which was using his head as a pillow. The last photo showed Milos lounging on a boat with an oar draped across his shoulders, the white tank top only drawing more attention to his bulging biceps. What did I learn from these four photos? He was hot, rich, and he knew it. Even his description about himself was subtle but confident. 6'2", tennis player and doctor, from Europe. "Hi, Milos, you seem like a total douche," I whispered to myself, but I swipe right anyways. My player meter was in the red, danger, turn back now while you still can, zone. But you don't become a doctor without years of hard work and dedication. He couldn't help his affluence any more than I could help my clumsiness. Those dimples, too. I knew it was a dead-end street, but I couldn't help exploring the possibility. Milos messaged me literally less than a minute after we had matched. "Hi, Brittany, how are you? You are very beautiful." "Oh, he thinks I'm beautiful? Please do continue." I typed back my response and hit send. "Hi, Milos. Thank you. Very kind. Winky face." Well, shoot, I was intrigued. My phone dinged again. "Can I have your number? I would prefer to text you." He wasn't wasting any time. Pause, deep breath. "Please don't be a booty call. Please, please don't be a booty call." Could I have possibly finally found someone decent? I prayed to the Tinder gods for a miracle. Sure, why not? I don't think I was really ready to date. It had only been 2 weeks since Samuel, but maybe the universe didn't want me to hurt and brood for months. Maybe it was throwing me a freaking bone for once. I paused and then gave him my digits and tried to keep myself busy for the next 10 minutes by pacing the wood floors in my bedroom, intermittently biting my fingernails. The worst feeling in the world is waiting. Finally, my phone dinged, and the kind of ding that let me know that it was a text. I let out a breath that I didn't know I was holding and lifted my cell phone to my eager face. "Hi, it's Milos." Yes, I may or may not have danced around the room. I waited another 10 minutes before responding with a simple but classy, "What's up?" winky face. We made small talk. He was in Los Angeles for work and had resided in California for 2 years. As excited as I was for the distraction, part of me was holding back. I wasn't ready to get hurt again. He talked, I politely flirted. Milos seemed too special and accomplished to pass up, but I didn't feel like myself. My wall was up, and it was 20 feet high with spikes, motion-activated lasers, and a moat with radioactive dolphins. Why did I feel like I was cheating on Samuel? My heart still belonged to him, even though he didn't deserve it. "Ding! Can I text you tomorrow? Would you like that?" Despite myself, I smiled and replied, "If you must, winky face." He did text me the next day, and the day after that, and the day after that. The next 5 days straight, my phone would randomly light up. This man was bold enough to know what he wanted and go after it. Or the stalker type. I was hoping for the first. It was a beautiful Friday in July. The weather was unusually cool. LA is known for its hot summers, but this Friday was a blissful relief. My phone chimed. It was Milos, of course. "What are you doing this Sunday? We should meet." "We should we? What do you suggest?" "How about coffee or beach?" Me in a bathing suit? I would blind him with my whiteness. Coffee is good. I didn't actually drink coffee. My demeanor is naturally high-strung, and caffeine makes me jumpy. Tea is more my speed, but I didn't need to explain this. "We can just wing it." "Sounds good, my dear. Talk tomorrow." "My dear? Kind of soon, but maybe cultural differences?" The prospect of meeting my European mystery doctor might have just put me in the best mood ever. There was a pep in my step, a grin on my face, and a tiny flicker burning with possibility. That was until Saturday came and went with cellular silence. Typical. I get my hopes up only to be disappointed. Why text me for almost a week and make plans only to blow me off? Enough. I had had enough of dating. Tinder? Delete. Maybe I was destined to own 20 turtles, grow my own food, and live in the woods. So be it. I forced myself to forget about the charming but flaky foreigner and focus back on my career. 2 weeks later, I was in Anaheim, California for another convention. One of those things where superfans show up to listen to YouTubers like myself talk, sign their posters, and take an exorbitant number of selfies. My internet star status wasn't as huge as some of my peers, but my fans were sweet and dedicated. They gave the best hugs and made me feel special. Some of them might even be listening to this book right now. If that's the case, hi, I love you. One of the perks of these conventions is that they usually put you up in a hotel, providing you with a few full access passes to invite a friend or manager. I chose to bring my friend Lawrence. He was my BFF, gayer than gay, the funniest man I had ever met, and a professional ballroom dancer. He could make even me look good on the dance floor. Lawrence was the perfect date because he was a constant in my life, and non-threatening because he liked boys, too. On our second-to-last night, while on our way to sushi with Lawrence's boyfriend, I heard my phone ding. What do you know? It was Milos. Hi, Brittany. What are you up to? 11 p.m. on a Saturday? He was looking for a hookup. In Orange County for work, you? I'm in Marina Del Rey with my cousin. Come join us for drinks? Have I told you guys yet that I don't drink? I don't drink, and let me tell you why. The first time I did consume alcohol was in college. My sweet mates at my dorm had peer pressured me into drinking 6 ounces of straight vodka at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on a weekday. Oh, it was bad. I regressed to the mental state of a kindergartner. Our hall was shaped like a square with grass in the middle. Had you been there, you would have witnessed me picking handfuls of grass and throwing it at people and running away in sheer terror. I somehow ended up in the nasty communal bathroom in the dorm common area, talking to the toilet about this guy, Mac, that lived above me. The toilet was a good listener. This led me to crawling up the stairs, letting myself into Mac's dorm room, which was magically unlocked, and writing him a poem. I want to go to McDonald's and buy a Big Mac. Mac and cheese. Bologna is whack. End poem. I even drew him a picture. Myself as a stick figure holding a hamburger. Needless to say, he never talked to me again. My sweet mates finally tired of my antics. They escorted me to the food court where I proceeded to steal someone's churro off their plate, shoving it into my mouth and chewing as if my life depended on it. I also got a taste of what it's going to be like when I enter menopause. Hot flashes lit up my face like a Christmas tree, even hours after I had finally sobered up. I am not in contact with any of my college friends. I wonder why. The second time I consumed alcohol was during a really bad week. It was right before finals, my sweet mate found out her basketball player boyfriend was cheating on her, and my other sweet mate was failing calculus. Many alcoholic beverages and tears flowed that night. Ugh. The next day, a massive headache and self-loathing made me vow to never touch the stuff again. Milos didn't need to know this about me, and I was mad at him for blowing me off. We are going to be here for a while if you want to join. Sorry, working. No smiley face. He didn't deserve it. Sunday came and went, drove back to L.A., dropping Lawrence off at his house along the way. Honestly, I had forgotten about Milos. He had wasted my time, and I was more concerned with unpacking and catching up on the latest episode of The Bachelor. Monday morning, my phone beeps. Hello, Brittany. What are you doing? Should I be honest? Eating potato chips with a face mask on while watching catty women fight over some guy on my laptop. Working. one-word answer, Ollie was going to get from now on. Would you like to meet up? Okay, he wasn't getting the hint. Look, to be honest, we had plans and you blew me off. Best of luck. Ding! No, you don't understand. Give me another chance, please. What are you doing in 45 minutes? Another moment of fate in my life. I could have sat with my clay mask and greasy hair watching my favorite reality show, but I had never before had a guy ask for a second chance. Maybe he had a good reason for going radio silent and then contacting me 2 weeks later. My schedule really was open that day, and curiosity got the best of me. Why meet up with me? Now? Yes. Where? Roasters, Hollywood Boulevard, 45 minutes? Could I get ready in 20 minutes and make it across town in time? If he had to wait for me, he deserved it. Fine, have it your way. Okay, see you soon. Mask scrubbed off, basic makeup haphazardly applied, my hair was dry shampooed and thankfully still styled from my days at the convention. Only had to fix a few strategic pieces with my curling iron to be on my way. You should have seen me, madly dashing through my walk-in closet slash office. I threw on a tank top that I knew was flattering and picked out the shortest yet not slutty shorts that I owned. Topped it off with my favorite knee-high boots, the ones with the fancy buckles. Ready or not, I went to meet the mysterious doctor who I just couldn't seem to say no to. But how do you say no to destiny? Chapter 2. Coffee. I was nervous. Why was I nervous? Sitting in traffic, running late, my hands were leaving salty pools on my steering wheel. Even with the AC churning full blast and holding my palms in front of the fully open vents, there was no saving me. My plan was the following. Show up, be a cold bitch, make him want me, go home, block his number. I felt like I had something to prove. If not to him, at least to myself. I am desirable. I am worthy. My self-esteem was in the toilet, and all I wanted was someone to look at me with those eyes. You know, when someone looks at you with wonder, like they can't believe that you are actually real? If I was an arcade, I wanted to be the gaming console that you won for 100,000 tickets. Even if only momentarily, I wanted to feel special. What was even weirder than the sweaty palms was my mental state. I had anxiety. Not a clinical diagnosis, per se, but definite first-date jitters. Finally, I made it to Roasters, found an open parking meter, which never happens, inserted my credit card, and then hastily got back into my vehicle. In LA, you pay for everything. There are no limits to the ways you can spend your money, and parking is rarely free. In my many years residing in the City of Angels, I have learned to love valet and always carry cash. Audiobooks as well. They are excellent anti-road rage. What now? Should I text him and tell him that I am here? Sitting in my trendy silver Mini Cooper, I couldn't seem to move. I mean, I had already gotten ready, battled through traffic, found a parking spot. What was the worst thing that could happen? He could just be another Tinder disappointment. Another story to tell my girlfriends on our semi-weekly hikes in Griffith Park. My love life hadn't been successful, but at least it was entertaining. Okay, now I was angry. I was letting some guy who was a total stranger and probably a flash in the pan get to me. Deep breath, grab purse, open door, close door, lock car, start walking. The metal on my boots clicking with every step to the annoyance of the pavement. At least I had the confidence in knowing that I looked desirable. How did I know this? There's a little game I like to play called the gas station test. It's pretty simple and it doesn't have to be a gas station. Head into any populated public venue before a date, find humans, walk past, and observe their reactions. Staring, raised eyebrows, double takes, all good signs. Creepy, flirtatious comments from the elderly cashier? Go get 'em, tiger. I looked better than I felt, but I strutted up to the coffee shop with false confidence. Trying to casually spot Milos, my heart was racing. Roasters was littered with tables and all different forms of life. Laptops, laughing, and lattes blanketed the outdoor space. My eyes quickly scanned face after face until there he was, sitting on the made-new-to-look-old bench next to the entrance. I will never forget what he wore, what he looked like in that moment. Blue faded jeans, a tight white t-shirt, and expensive-looking tennis shoes. Milos's eyes locked with mine. They popped open like he'd been sleeping, and I had startled him awake. Realizing himself, he hurriedly picked up his wallet and keys next to him on the bench, rose to his feet, and gifted me with an overly friendly grin. This was bad. This was very, very bad. As I walked closer, I realized that this guy didn't look like his photos. He looked better. On his Tinder pictures, you couldn't spot his adorable freckles. Long, thick eyelashes framed his ocean blue eyes. Perfect teeth, kissable full lips. His blonde hair had been expertly cut, modern. Through his tight shirt, you could make out the outline of his muscles, which I am sure was on purpose. The boy was wearing a size medium when his biceps were screaming for a large. This man was a doctor? I should get sick more often. Great, my palms were sweating again. We did that thing that people do in movies where they see each other and come to a stop somewhere in the middle of a beautiful wide shot, drawn together like magnets. "Hello, Brittany. It is my pleasure meeting you," he said. His English needed some work. Who gives a rhymes with mitt? "Milos, right? Nice to meet you." "Stick to the plan, Brittany. Sit, flirt, reject, leave. Don't look at the dimples. Ignore the veins artistically climbing up his arms. This is a trap." He motioned for me to follow as he opened the front door, a sexy grin and a nod of his head to the right indicating that I should go first. "What a gentleman," was my response as I breezed past, ogling the most handsome man I had ever seen. What was to my advantage was, one, I was emotionally unavailable, and two, I didn't trust him. Milos was by far the most majestic creature I had ever laid eyes on, but I was still mad at him for toying with me. The instant we got into the coffee shop, I relaxed, realizing that a guy like him would never be interested in a girl like me. Not that I wasn't attractive, but he was the type of guy that could have literally anyone he wanted. That realization is when I regained focus. Back to my earlier plan of show up, show off, peace out. We stood side by side at the front counter, him ordering a cappuccino, myself a daring cup of raspberry chamomile tea.
"You are even more beautiful than your photos," Milos said, handing the barista his credit card, the compliment somehow more dazzling laced with his thick accent.
"Not falling for that one." "This is true," I replied, smirking. "Game on." Even with Roasters being as busy as it was, there were two stools open side by side at the counter. Again, like a film where everything had been staged, waiting for just us.
"Why don't you sit? I will bring the drinks," he suggested.
"Are you sure they won't be too heavy? I mean, you're obviously out of shape." It took him a moment to realize that I was joking. His face cracked into a molten grin.
"Keep your cell phone handy just in case. Might need you to call a doctor," he answered.
"I might actually know one. Tall, cocky, owns a dog. I hope you're not allergic." I was referencing the English bulldog in his profile photo taken the first day he brought home his puppy named Louie. In case you needed context as to why what I just said was funny and witty, the fact that he was an animal lover made him even more desirable. Sipping our respective drinks, our words bounced back and forth like a competitive game of ping pong. He was eating it up, and I was enjoying being sassy for once in my life. We sat there in that cafe for hours, the conversation flowing faster than the caffeine through his veins. Three cappuccinos later, and I still had his attention.
"Sorry if I seem tired. I was doing surgery all this morning."
"Really? What kind of surgery?"
"My friend, Dr. Bernard, needed help with a facelift. I am here for a lot of surgeries."
To be honest, plastic surgery scares me. I would rather have a face full of wrinkles that are mine than have my skin unnaturally stretched, cut, and stapled like a human canvas. When I look in the mirror, I want to recognize the person looking back. If you ever suggest that I need anything done, I will slap you. It took a second for him to respond, an intensity in his eyes as he very carefully looked me up and down. Why would I do that? You are gorgeous. You need nothing. So freaking cheesy, but I bought every word. Milos went on to tell me about his adventures at his main job, working in the ER at Xavier Hospital in San Diego. He just happened to match with me on Tinder when he was in Beverly Hills working with Dr. Bernard. According to Milos, I was his first date since coming to the States. Should I have been honest about how many dates I had been on from Tinder alone? Nope. Whenever you get to know someone, you always go through the same cycle of questions. Where are you from? Me, Sedona. Him, Serbia. What was your childhood like? Me, played in the creek all summer long and ate pizza. Him, private boarding school in England. How many languages do you speak? Me, 2. English and bad English. Him, 5. Serbian, English, German, Russian, and Latin. When it got to the part where we talked about our families, Milos visibly tensed. I didn't need to find out every tiny detail on our first and only rendezvous, so whatever he wanted to divulge was fine by me. He was born in 1988, and from 1991 to 1999, his country was at war. Yugoslavia broke apart, and I didn't fully understand the rest, even as he patiently recounted the facts behind it. War rarely makes sense. His family was one of the wealthiest in Europe before the war, and then tragically fell into ruin. Milos described hanging out with his group of friends, jumping from landmine to landmine just for fun. A dare, because they were set to not explode if the weight was under 75 pounds. I played on a swing set in my backyard while he and his buddies located gun caches. At night, he would sleep in the hallway because bullets had more walls to travel through that way. Milos lived on powdered milk, canned food, and no electricity or running water until he was 5 years old. I can't imagine what that must have been like, to live in that kind of fear every day. To wonder if just walking down the street, a bomb will fall out of the sky, ending your already short existence. My grandfather, Misha, he had a hotel. There were lots and lots of refugees on the streets, so his friend, who owned a hotel with him, they decided to let them stay for free, right? So they come back to the hotel after, let's say, a few days, and everything is gone. Poof! They had stolen and sold everything. Even the wiring and the walls? It was crazy. My grandfather and his friend, they decide to put booby traps in the hotel in case any of the refugees come back, right? My grandfather's friend was not smart, and he goes drinking. After much vodka, he comes to the hotel, and one of the bombs goes off. At this point in the story, I gasped. Please tell me he didn't get hurt. I don't really want to hear the rest of this tale unless it is a happy ending with no missing limbs. You know when people start to tell you awkward tales and you keep repeating in your head, I don't want to hear this, I don't want to hear this, I don't want to hear this, only me? He was fine, just a few burns and a hangover. Phew, it was okay to laugh. Milos had a gift with words, even with his broken English, weaving them in a way that I could picture clearly in my head what he was trying to convey. Milos's mom, Zora, was a general in the Serbian army. She parlayed her skills into helping to start multiple businesses with her best friend, Nikola. During the war, they took a loan from some Russian friends and started a furniture company. High-end Italian furniture, which in turn they sold to wealthy Russian clients. Zora thought it best that Milos went to boarding school, where it was safer, so he lived in England for a few years towards the end of the war. He was also a very gifted athlete. At 16, Milos received a tennis scholarship to a local high school next to Boise State in Idaho. He told me how he grew up and trained with Novak Djokovic and was on track to become a tennis superstar until he tore his ACL while back in Serbia on summer break. He had a break on his break. Talk about a bad break. I will stop using the word break now. So, how did you make the leap from tennis to medicine? Not the first time he had been asked this question. I did MMA for a bit because I was very angry, then served in the Serbian army for a year. I always wanted to help people, and I like studying, so I focused on the entrance exams. I did well, and then went to medical school. Overachiever much? Not that I minded. Most of the guys I had dated so far had little to no ambition. It was just weird, in a good way. Nursing my third cup of non-caffeinated tea, I desperately had to pee, but I wanted to talk to him more than I wanted to empty my bladder. You said, though, that you still work for your family? He explained that Nikola had gathered the profits from the furniture business and invested in land, a water factory, architecture company, a coffee brand, and more. He was an entrepreneur, and Miloš still helped his father figure with the day-to-day operations. A middleman of sorts when he wasn't being a hotshot doctor. It was my turn to talk about my family. We were middle class. My dad, Robert, was an airline pilot for 30 years until his atrial fibrillation forced him into early retirement. My mother, Barbara, was a flight attendant turned stay-at-home mom. And no, they didn't meet because he was a pilot and she was a stewardess. They connected on a plane where they were both passengers. It was the 70s. At this point, my mom was straightening her hair and wearing copious amounts of electric blue eyeshadow. She was at the end of a grueling two-week shift and the flight was empty. Tediously, she had collected pillows, lifted up the armrests, and planned on sleeping as she had the whole row to herself. My dad boarded the almost empty airplane, took one look at my mom, and decided he had to sit next to her. She was too tired to say no and too angry to speak in general, so she ignored him for the first half of their trip. Finally, my dad got her talking and asked her out on a date. They were pretty much inseparable after that. A few months into their love story, my parents were out to dinner, and my mom realized that she had never asked my dad what he did for a living.
"I'm an airline pilot."
According to my mother, she sighed and guffawed. In total disbelief, she dished out a very serious retort. "That's funny, because I don't date pilots."
"No, really, I'm a 747 captain for Northwest."
Thinking it was some sort of joke, my father was forced to grab his uniform from his car and bring it into the restaurant. He had to show it to my mother before she would believe him. Pilots during this time were playboys. Have you seen the movie Catch Me If You Can? All the flight attendants were gorgeous and the aviators were gods. My mom described how she was weighed in every time she checked in. If you were 5 pounds over your ideal weight, then you were sent home. Your hair, makeup, and pantyhose were checked. If they didn't fit their physical standards, you didn't fly. They were supermodels in the sky with 5,000 applicants for every one position. My dad loved my mom. My mom loved my dad. Their love lasted for over 38 years before his passing. After I was born, we moved from Minnetonka, Minnesota to Sedona, Arizona. My older brother was allergic to mosquitoes, and in Minnesota, they are the national bird. While gorgeous, Sedona at the same time was mostly a retirement community. The Red Rocks were otherworldly, but the majority of residents hated children. In 1985, the lifestyle in Sedona was as follows. One traffic light, no park, one movie theater, one grocery store that was also a drugstore, mostly dirt roads, one KFC, no mall, boring, boring, boring. Due to the lack of children my age, I was always approaching any adult in my path. My mom said I was 3 years old when I marched up to a woman in the cereal aisle. "Where did you get those shoes?" I demanded, very serious, hand on hip. Fashionista since birth. I was also taught to say please and thank you, to have manners. Not yet attending kindergarten, I was my mom's errand buddy. We were at the post office when an older gentleman accidentally dropped his mail in front of us. Being the well-trained toddler that I was, I went to help him pick up the scattered packets of parchment. Whack! He hit me on the head with a magazine. "She's trying to steal my mail," he shouted.
I'm pretty sure my mother had smoke coming out of her ears.
What I'm trying to say is that my family wasn't super wealthy, but they weren't poor either. My childhood was interesting, but nothing compared to what Milos had experienced. The kind of adventures Milos was describing were unimaginable. Photos on his phone boasted his Tuscan-style development property in Montenegro. Zora and Nikola had purchased the multi-million-dollar piece of land and so far only completed half of the proposed villas. Milos also had a high-end flat in Russia acquired from his brief stint in oil, property in Croatia, oh yeah, and a yacht.
We don't like to take it out much because fuel is expensive. It was a bargain at $900,000, but now it just sits there. Why waste $5,000 unless it's a special occasion, right?
Uh-huh, totally. Makes sense.
He continued to talk about lavish vacations his family ventured on each year. Ibiza, the Maldives, so on and so forth. Showing me his timepiece, he boasted about his watch collection, each ticker sporting a price tag of $25,000 or higher. In Serbia, he had a closet full of Tom Ford suits and clothing that he had purchased but never worn. Another photo of his expensive black Audi that Nikola was now driving just for kicks.
When people start talking about their wealth, I stop listening. Frankly, it makes me uncomfortable. Money is great and all, it makes your life easier, but it doesn't make you happier. The way Milo started to throw around what he owned and how much he had paid for it really started to turn me off. I care more about someone's heart than their bank account. I think he sensed my shift in mood because he kept giving me puzzled looks. You could see the wheels turning in his head trying to figure me out. Heck, I am so complicated, I can't figure myself out most of the time. Our date was coming to an end, I was tired, I was over it. My go-to move when I want to get out of a situation is to blame it on my career.
Well, it's been awesome meeting you. I have to get going, so much editing to finish before tomorrow.
Poor Milos, he was the nervous one now.
I doubt that many women in his life had ever ended the date first. My gut instinct was that Milos was used to girls falling all over him, and I was looking for more than a handsome guy with nice toys. At this point, I was wasting his time and mine.
Uneasy, he started tapping his hand against his leg.
I understand. Can I walk you to your car?
To be honest, I had had enough of his presence. The boasting and bragging had turned me off faster than a spaceship. Or a rocket ship, which is faster. Faster than a space rocket modified car loaded with nitrous oxide fast. I was done. As we exited the coffee shop, my long legs propelled me to my car. Milos had no trouble keeping up, his stature an advantage in this situation. I can usually outwalk people, but I had met my match. From the corner of my eye, I saw him shove his hands in his pockets, his head slightly downcast. My mind was set. It had been fun, but he was not the one for me. After unlocking my car, I turned to give him a hug because I hug everyone. Thank you again for tea. Safe travels back to San Diego.
I am actually staying at my grandma's house in Beverly Hills tonight. What are you doing tomorrow?
Working, because I am always working.
Pre-production on a video. Typical week for me.
Can I take you to lunch?
This was another first. Never in all my years of dating had anyone been so bold. I was used to the 3-day rule. Encounter, they don't call or text for the next 3 days, lead someone on for a few weeks, maybe go on a second date. He had honestly caught me off guard, and before I knew it, I was saying, sure.
Milos sighed, his body visibly relaxing. That ridiculously adorable smile once again lit up his face.
Great, great. We can go wherever you want.
Text me. I will think about it.
Backing away, but still looking at me, the smile changed from innocent to slightly mischievous.
Thank you for coming to meet me today, Brittany.
I was so confused.
Chapter 3. Falling in Love.
Milos wanted to take me to some fancy steakhouse in Beverly Hills. Not really my style, and since I was almost positive that we were going nowhere, I made him come to me. Fancy usually means spices, small portions, and a ridiculous price tag. But there was no need to try and impress me. I just wanted to get this second date over with. My suggestion was this funky grocery store 5 minutes from my house that was also a cafe. It was jammed Monday through Friday and well known for its rotating menu of home-cooked goodness. When I find a place I like to eat at, I'm like a broken record. Of course, he sent me a text 25 minutes before we were supposed to meet. I think I am here. Let me know when you arrive. Ugh, sigh, blah. This may sound crazy, but I was trying to turn him off. Wearing a loose gray t-shirt, old jeans, and sneakers. My hair was back in a ponytail, and the only eye makeup I was rocking was mascara. My outfit was intended to be a boner killer. Did I leave the house right away? Nope. Return text. We said 1 p.m., right? I might be a few minutes late. I plopped back down at my computer and continued answering emails that could have waited. The anxiety started to set in hardcore. Should I cancel? Who cares that he drove an hour to Pasadena from his rich grandma's house? He should be out doing doctor stuff, right? Drawing blood, saving lives, not pursuing me. But I am a pleaser by nature, and my natural instinct got the best of me. I hate it, but I always tend to put myself in other people's shoes. Empathy? I have it in spades. My brain started picturing Milos sitting in his car, checking his phone every few minutes while scanning the parking lot, his forehead creased with worry, expecting me to show up at any moment. That thought got me out of my chair. Fine, I'm going, but I'm not staying long. I pulled into the cafe parking lot, and of course he was leaning against his car, too cool for school. His demeanor was casual, with his cell phone to his right ear. Whoever was on the other line said something amusing as he broke out into laughter. In that same moment, he noticed me. I received a relaxed, no-cares-in-the-world wave, not the nervous Milos I had pictured in my head. My eyes did a quick once-over. He was sporting another tight V-neck shirt, this time baby blue. Faded blue jeans and designer sneakers completed his ensemble. The man looked ridiculously handsome, and I hated him for it. Approaching his car, I heard him speaking what I assumed was Serbian, indicating to whoever was on the phone that he had to go. Putting his cell phone in his back pocket, he raised his sunglasses to the top of his head and walked towards me. The smile on his face was warm and inviting. "Hello, Brittany. You look very nice," he said. He should have been lying, but his eyes said he wasn't. I worked really hard on this outfit. Sporty Spice ain't got nothing on me. Milos laughed, not immune to my Spice Girls joke. I was talking to Nikola. Time zones make it tricky, and we had a deal for selling our water factory. I haven't been sleeping much. Let me get you some cheese for that wine. Come on. Dramatically rolling my eyes, I breezed past him. The cafe was surprisingly empty. Good, I was famished. I ordered my usual salad. Milos settled on a chicken burrito. The tables in the dining room were rickety, leaning to the side if he didn't place cardboard to varying degrees under the legs. Either the floor was uneven or the tables were drunk. My date went to set his burrito down, and to his dismay, it almost slid right off. "Shit," he exclaimed, grabbing it at the last second. I burst out laughing. He was used to caviar. Myself? Styrofoam cups and $10 meals. If he was going to hang out with me, this is how I rolled. Still carrying my plate, I headed over to the plastic utensil area and retrieved a stack of napkins. Without saying a word, I indicated that he should hold my veggie goodness. "Want to see a magic trick?" I mumbled, crouching down and strategically placing the napkins under the gimpy table leg closest to me. "Ta-da! Let's try this again." Milos tenderly set down our meals and waited. Success! Relieved, he plopped down into the chair across from me. "You're good at that," he said. "I am good at a lot of things," I retorted, instantly regretting that statement. It sounded slightly sexual, and there was something I hadn't told him yet. Not that I was ashamed, it just wasn't the right time, and I didn't want to give him the wrong impression. Might have been the plethora of Jane Austen novels I had consumed as a child, but I wanted an old-fashioned romance, and I was a prude. Strong morals and unrealistic ideals had put a halt on any makeout session going beyond first base. What I am trying long-windedly to say is that I was a virgin. A real-life virgin in L.A. over the age of 30? I was a freaking unicorn. Milos was definitely not a virgin. A cheeky grin plastered on his face as he made eating a burrito look seductive. Conversation flowed, Milos talking about a project he had started at UCLA involving stem cells. He had founded a fitness company focusing on helping individuals suffering from diabetes. Partnering with a few other doctors, they were designing workout, diet, and nutrition routines to help complement the medicinal side. As doctors, we can only do so much. A drug is a drug, but diet? That helps. When you're in shape, it helps a little more, he explained. It was kind of cute how passionate he was about his job. Healing the body, not just prescribing meds left and right. No wonder the guy didn't sleep. Between his fitness company, family dealings, driving back and forth to L.A., and working part-time in the ER in San Diego, I noticed the dark circles under his eyes, his only flaw. We got to talking about previous jobs. I started hustling at a bagel shop when I was 12. They paid me only $5 an hour, and I had to be there at 6 a.m. every day. I loved it, pocketing a whopping $400 that summer. My fake nails at the time were a pain, packed with cream cheese and an assortment of gluten. I was a walking health code violation. After that, I worked as a hostess, food runner, at an ice cream shop, for a clothing company doing inventory, pet sitter, and at a toy store. Basically, as soon as I could have a job and make my own money, I thirsted for financial independence. One thing my parents taught me how to do was work. Milos's family employed him when he was a teenager at their coffee company. He and his cousin, Jovan, would load the semi-trucks at night. By the time they were finished, it was dawn. Exhausted and hungry, they would go to a diner close by and order every single breakfast item on the menu, happily spending most of the money they had just earned on food. You know how teenage boys love to eat. Jovan was still in Serbia and more like a brother to Milos than anything else. Showing me photos of him on his phone, I could see that he was very handsome, but with an intense demeanor. Shaggy dark hair framed a chiseled face with chocolate brown eyes. If all the men in Eastern Europe looked like Milos and Jovan, I was born in the wrong country. His cousin was now working as a mechanical engineer, and they were still in constant contact, even though Milos had been gone for over 2 years. We are not as close as we used to be. Now we only talk, what, 2 days? Before every day. Funny, the cultural differences. He thought that talking every couple of days was being out of contact. If I reached out to my friends once a month, I thought I was doing good. His mom had coffee with her neighbors every morning, and Nikola saw Milos's godfather, Lav, multiple times a week. They relied on each other through war and financial crisis. Their community was tight-knit, born from desperate circumstance. When things started turning around for his family financially, Milos had money to burn. For starters, he opened up a fancy pizza joint right in the heart of Belgrade. It was beautiful. Finest Italian furniture from Nicola, right? And we had gelato as well, but a very special kind. Remind me and I will show you. My friends and I love to eat there. It had the best pizza in all of Belgrade, but I did not manage it well. One of the waiters was stealing the alcohol and the books never balanced. It was more trouble than it was worth, so I let it go. Nightclub? He had one of those too. His business partners ran it into the ground with mismanagement. Milos just wanted to own a bar for shits and giggles. It was still around, but now rented out only for special events. He wanted to sell it, but one of the business partners was in jail for money laundering. Milos's other business partner's father was killed, Carbom, a high-ranking politician with unpopular beliefs. Apparently car bombs were a daily occurrence in Serbia. Don't like someone? Just blow them up. Everyone does it. Those last three sentences were laced with horrified sarcasm. His birth country was sounding more and more like the Wild West. Fascinating but bloodthirsty.